Rabbi David, you can begin.
Thank you, Rabbi Shlita. I am very enamored of the Gemara in Bochim. Very famous Gemara. I began, as you can hear me. The Gemara says in Sochim, does anyone hear me?
Rabbi David, can I maybe suggest to see if you can turn off your camera and see if the voice recorder will be working better?
Now, Rabbi's me.
Okay, you hear me now?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Now you hear me?
Yes, much better. Thank you.
Okay.
Yes, keep going.
Okay, great. I'm sorry. You'll tell me. Okay. So the Gemara says in Sochim, Mar Bered Rabina, the Gemara says that Mar, the son of Rabina, every year he used to fast with the exception of 3 days. One day was Atzeres, Shavuos, one day was Purim, and one day was Erev Yom Kippur. Apparently all these days had in them an obligation of a Seuda. Erev Yom Kippur we know, Purim as well, and Atzeres. The Gemara says that on Shavuos, the reason for the Suda, Yom Shenitna Bo Torah. The day the Torah is given, there's a Chi of Suda. It's based on the Ramban in Parshat Mishpatim. You can't show us in Suda Chazal say the Gomro Shal Torah. So then the Gemara has the following comment. The Gemara says, Omar, Rabbi Yosef said, Ilav Hayoma Kogorim Kama Yosef Ika B'shuka. If not for the day of Kabbalah Satorah, I'll translate in a very down-to-earth kind of way. I would just be another Joe in the marketplace. Kama Yosef Ika B'shuka. Kama Abishai David Ika B'shuka. I'd be another Tom, Dick, and Harry floating around the marketplace. So what gave me and what gives me my distinctiveness? The answer is, says Rashi, Shalamadati Torah V'nitzramamti. As a result of learning Torah, my entire persona was transformed. I was completely changed. Harei anoshim arbei b'shuk sheshmam yosef umabei nilaveinam. There are many people, many Joes, quote unquote, in the marketplace. Many people named Yosef. What's the distinction between them and myself? And the answer is, the distinction is my connection to Limud HaTorah. When I was introduced to the study of Torah, my entire life was metamorphosed, was transformed. So how do I go about doing it? There's no chokhmah. There's one key. Haraita Shayachim Yarva the Yeshiva. Person wants to become a Ben Torah Tam Chacham. He has to, as they say in simple Yiddish, kvetch the bank. He has to learn by smother. And Rashi and Shabbos on the idea of the Maiminim or the Masmilim. So Rashi says very clearly, who are the Maiminim? Asukim b'chol koicham, those that are devoted to the study of Torah with all of their strength, utrudim, preoccupied, v'das sodam, ke'odim ha'mishtamesh b'yad yimino, shehu ikar, the way a person uses his right hand. So the key to hatzlocha in Torah is hasmada. Not as many people think, kishronos, the fact that I'm a genius, intellectual acuity, great acumen, no, that obviously helps, but ultimately the key is hasmada. All of you have a chelik in Torah, all of you have the ability to grow in Torah, and the moment you begin to learn, you'll realize initially it's Torah Hashem, but as the Gemara says in Kedushin Abed Zarah, ultimately becomes that which you're going to acquire, will be yours. And that's what Shavuos is all about. We go from Torah Hashem, and it becomes Taraso, something that you acquired. How did you acquire it? Through Asmada, through Yegia, through diligence, through unbelievable effort. And as the Gemara says, Yagata Umasasa, Tamin. Halavai all of us should be Zeche to that element of Yegia, this coming Shavuos, to become Bnei Torah, and switch from Torah Hashem to Taraso.
Yisha Kerov, Rabbi David, thank you so much for those words. like to invite Rabbi Eisenstein to say some words of inspiration. Okay. I don't know if Rabbi Eisenstein was able to get on. I'd like to invite Rabbi Steven to say some words of inspiration.
He's saying the pasuk says in the Torah, "Mezos haTorah." We say it all the time when the Torah is raised at Hagba. "Mezos haTorah shesam Moshe lefnei bnei Yisrael." Why does it say "Mezos haTorah shesam Moshe lefnei bnei Yisrael"? Why doesn't it say "lebnei Yisrael"? Why doesn't it say that this is a Torah that a Kadosh Baruch Hu gave to bnei Yisrael? So the Maharal in his Sefer Tiferes Yisrael asks us in the Hakdama, in the introduction to his Sefer, and he says if the pasuk would have said "Bizos haTorah shesam Moshe libnei Yisrael" instead of "lifnei" in front of, a person might have thought that the Torah is exclusive for the Talmid Chacham, for the people, for the intellectual people, and not for the rest of Klal Yisrael. So comes the Torah and says, "No, Bizos haTorah shesam Moshe libnei bnei Yisrael." It's placed munach. It's placed in front of us for anybody to come and take. Anybody who wants to have a chelek, to have a portion in this Torah, he could come and he can take it. The bracha that we start with in Birchas HaTorah, it says, La'asok bedivrei Torah. The Maharal continues and he says, why does it say La'asok bedivrei Torah? Why doesn't it say Lilmod Torah, Lilmod bedivrei Torah? What's the difference between La'asok bedivrei Torah? Why didn't the Chazal, when they made the bracha, why didn't they just say Lilmod Torah? We're making a bracha on learning Torah, not on La'asok bedivrei, not on toiling in Torah. The Maharal says it's the same Yesod. That a person has to realize, every one of us has to realize, like the Rashi was saying before, that Torah, learning Torah, is all about learning Torah, toiling in the Torah. A person, a Kodesh Baruch Hu, wants us to see that we care about the Torah, that we want to create this relationship. It's not about how much you know, what you know, if you're going to end up being successful and remembering every single thing that you learned. The whole point of Torah is the process that you're going through. And that's why the Chazal are trying to explain that to us, teach us that in the bracha itself. It's lasuk bedivrei Torah. So a person has to realize, as Rashi was saying before, we all have a chelek in Torah. It just is, it's about the relationship. It's the asek, the toiling that we're going to go through. And that's everybody on their individual level. Everybody has their own chelek. Everybody has their own asek in the Torah. Nobody could take anybody else's chelek. It's all about the toiling, but ultimately that toiling, that asek, is showing HaKadosh Baruch Hu that we care about creating that relationship. And that's what Shavuos is all about. Shavuos is a Rosh Hashanah for Torah. It's about davening for our chelek, for your personal chelek in Torah. We should be zocha to see, everybody should be able to realize their own chelek and to understand that it's all about the relationship, the asek in the Torah, not necessarily the limud HaTorah, but it's the asek HaTorah.
Yishar Koach, Rabbi Steven, thank you so much for those words. I'd like to invite Rabbi Glatt to say a few words.
Thank you. There's a fascinating line of Gemara, which is off-quoted, but never fully put in its context, which appears in a couple of places, but one place is in Horios, on Daf Yud Amud Beis. The Gemara says, the beginning of the statement, I'm sure many will recognize, Amar Yud Amar Rav, La'olam Yasok Adam B'Torah, that a person should always engage in, note the language of engage in, it's not merely learning, it's to be involved with Torah and mitzvos, not for the right purposes, because ultimately, in the end of the day, it will bring you to come to do those very same things, learn Torah, to do the mitzvos for the right purposes. And that, shalom lishma, bal lishma, we've all heard in enough Musar Shmuz. But then the Gemara goes on to say something else, which is remarkable. The Gemara cites an example of this. This is the Gemara's choice of mitosh alolishma balishma. And what is that choice? Something we'll be reading about in a few parshios. Shebeschar mem beis karbanos shehekri balak harasha zacha v'yatzta mimenu rus. After all, for the 42 karbanos that Balak, the king of Moab, the Rasha Merusha, who hired a bigger Rasha Merusha, Bilam, to go and try to curse the Bnei Yisrael, he brought 42 karbanos trying to entice God to curse the Jews. What happened? Rus HaMoabiyah, the progenitor of Mashiach, of David HaMelech, came out of him. After all, to Amar Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina, Rus Bas Beno Shel Eglon Ben Beno Shel Balak Melech Moab. After all, we cite from one of the Amorim that Rus was a granddaughter of Eglon, the king of Moab, who was a grandson of Balak. It's very bizarre. Is that Mitosha Lolishma Balishma? How are we supposed to understand that? Meaning to say, I always thought Mitosha Lolishma Balishma was a very personal thing. You start doing something, getting used to it, and then over time, it's something that develops. In fact, this question caused some of the Achronim to understand that it's just a glorified mitzvah, Gereres mitzvah. Sar mitzvah, mitzvah. You do a mitzvah, Hashem will help you get another mitzvah, do another mitzvah. So yeah, Nachanami, he did a mitzvah, not for the right reason, and eventually it ended up leading to something good coming out of him. Generations down the line, Rus came. But I think there's a deeper pshat in this Gemara. I'll note a question. Why did the Gemara have to cite from Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina, that Rus was not just a descendant of whom? Of Balak, but she was a granddaughter of Eglon, who was a grandson himself of Balak. I think that's where the key lies. And if we appreciate who Eglon was, he was somebody who was a really fat, really evil man who was killed by a shofet of the Bnei Yisrael, by Ehud. And yet, when Ehud announced himself in the name of Elohim, which was only a kinoi of Hashem's name, nonetheless, this non-Jewish, very large king rose from his seat in honor of God's name. Where did that come from? That's a very bizarre thing for Eglon to do. Every time he heard the name of some other nation's god, he would rise. Obviously, there was a sensitivity that Eglon had to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Little Eglon, sitting on the knee of his grandfather Balak, must have heard the stories of how Balak said, yeah, that nation, these Jews who came in here, I remember once encountering the greatness of their god. That wasn't for the right purposes. He didn't mean to bring those karbanos to draw close to the Boreola. He brought it, so cursed Bnei Yisrael. But nonetheless, in that interaction, he was essentially recognizing that the only source of power in this universe is God, the one true God. And that left a roshim on him. And he told that over and passed it on in his family. That little drop of water made an impact on him. And it was passed on to Eglon, who now knew when he hears this God, he doesn't worship this God. But when he hears this God, he rises, he gets out of his chair and stands. If you wonder where Rus came from, this princess chose to marry a foreigner Jew who came into the land when we read Megillas Rus on Shavuot. That's a very striking thing to see. Why would she do so? It's because they knew the Jews were special. It was that little bit of Shalom Lishma, but that interaction with Torah, that engagement with the Borei Olam, that left a small Rosha, and over time trickled into a massive roaring river, which led to David and eventually Mashiach. In all of our own lives, even at a time like this, when it's so hard to learn Torah, it's so hard to feel connected. Even a little bit of Torah learning, just a small bit, even if done shalom lishma, can leave such an impact on us and for Dori Doros to be people that are connected to the Boreal.
Yisher koach, Rabbi Glatt, thank you so much. We'd like to invite Rabbi Ifra to share some words of Torah.
Thank you. We're all familiar with the famous Gemara in Shabbos, where the Gemara says that the Ger came to Shammai HaZakin and asked him to teach him the entire Torah as he stood on one leg. And Shammai dechafo be'amas habinyan. He took a big beam that's used for building and he pushed the Ger away. And then the Ger came to Hillel with the same request, convert me as you teach me the whole Torah on one leg. And Hillel was megayer him. And he told him, de'olach sani l'chavrich losavid vidach pirushi zilgmor. That which you don't want done to you, don't do to others. The rest is just mefarshim, go and learn. The Marsha is bothered in that Gemara. What is going on over here? What kind of person is this Ger? If he's a serious person, so what's the question that he's asking? What kind of request is it? Teach me the whole Torah while you're standing on one foot? It's a ridiculous request. And if he's not a serious person, if he's a clown, so what business does Hillel have converting him? So the Marsha explains, obviously he's a serious person. Hillel converted him. But the request was, give me one yesod, one fundamental principle upon which the entire Torah stands. And Shammai dechafo ba'amas habinyan. Shammai pushes him away. He says, just like a building can't stand on one beam, you need to lay an entire foundation for the building to stand, so too the Torah doesn't have one principle that holds up the whole thing. And Hillel disagrees. Hillel is megayrim, and he says there is one fundamental principle upon which the entire Torah rests, and that is the Haftarach HaMocha. So it always bothers me. The question begs itself, I think, even, that how do we understand this statement of Hillel in light of the Gemara in the end of Makos and Daf Chav Dalet? The Gemara says at the end of Makos, Bach Habakkuk, the Hemidon Halachas, that Habakkuk Hanavi came and he provided one principle which can capture all tired mitzvos. And that principle was that Tzadik Be'emunaso Yichya, that Tzadik lives with his Emuna. So the one principle that captures the entire Torah is Emuna. And how does that fit with Hillel's statement that the one principle that captures the entire Torah is Vavter Echa Kamocha? We know that Habakkuk obviously preceded Hillel by many generations. So why did Hillel stray from that path? And I think that the answer is can be understood when we understand what Emuna is really all about. Emuna is not just philosophy, right? Like the Chazon Ish describes in his Sefer Emuna Bitachon, Emuna and Bitachon are two sides of the same coin. There's a philosophy, and then there are behaviors. There's a way that we live in this world. And Emuna is something that has to be practiced. And if a person has real Emuna, there's no way he would ever mistreat anybody else. A person with real Emuna believes that Hashem runs the world. And since Hashem runs the world, whatever happens to me in my life is because Hashem wants it to happen. And if this is what Hashem wants it to happen, even if the messenger to bring this upon me was another person, I still wouldn't have a reason to mistreat that person because that person is just carrying out what Hashem has in store for me. And based on this idea, we see that the two statements, the one of Hillel and the one of Habakkuk, are also two sides of the same coin. The statement of Habakkuk, Tzadik Be'emunaso Yichya, is the philosophy that we know that Hashem is running the world and whatever is happening is meant to happen. And as a result of that, we come to Hillel's statement, which is the Alach Sani L'Chavrich Lo Savid. I would never mistreat anybody else because I would never have a reason to. That's what Hillel is telling the Ger. You never have a reason to mistreat anyone if you have real Emuna. And the last question that remains over here is why did Hillel choose to formulate this principle differently than Habakkuk? And I think the answer can be found also in a statement in the Sefer Achinoch and in the Seals of Sharim, which is that a person's thoughts are influenced by the way we act. This person, this Ger, is new to Judaism. And Hillel knows that. And Hillel wants to teach him something that's going to help him internalize the fundamental teachings of what it means to be Jewish. So Hillel tells him, I'm going to teach you a behavior of how to treat other people. But you should know this is much more than just a behavior, because achre pu'ulos nimshachem halavavos, and by practicing this behavior, ultimately you'll get to tzadik be'emunaso yichyeh. Have a great Yom Tov.
Yisher koach, Rabbi Ifra, thank you so much. We'll invite Rabbi Yudin to say a few words.
Thank you very much. The Rav Shiva began earlier with the famous Gemara in Maseches Pesachim, that Rav Yosef would ask for a special meal to be served for him on Shavuos. He would request, the Gemara says, an igla tilsa, a very, very fancy, fat, delicious piece of meat. And the Gemara says, as Rav Shiva quoted before, Omar, he said, ilav hayoma d'kagarim, were it not for this day, which was effective, kama Yosef ika bashuka, how many Yosefs would there be in the marketplace? And as Rav Shiva quoted before, Rashi says, so strongly there, Rashi comments, Ilav Ayoma, what happened on that day? Shalamadati Torah, I learned Torah in this Romamti, and I was elevated. And that language of Rashi, I think, requires explanation a little bit. What's Rashi saying when Rashi says, Lamadati Torah in this Romamti, I was elevated? What's the message Rashi's driving at when he mentions these words? We find a similar language in the Braisa in the last parak of Avos. The famous Braisa begins, he gets many, many things. And the Braisa lists many, many amazing, wonderful attributes and zechuyos that a person has when they learn Torah Lishma. And the final closing one is, it says, that when a person learns Torah, it picks them up, it makes them grow, and elevates them among all of humanity. What's the idea behind this message, both in the Gemara and in the last parak of Avos? We know that we are compounded, every human being is compounded of two parts. We're a guf and we're a neshama. And we start off our lives pretty much physical, little children. You look, watch little children, and even sometimes bigger little children, they're only focused on the gashmi, the body, the taiva, the desire, the animalistic instincts that we have inside of ourselves. And the truth of the matter is most of the world around us, if you look at the world writ large, we'll notice a similar thing. Most people in the world are really focused on the physicalities of the world, on the trimmings, on the things that will give them pleasure and fulfill their desires in this world. We know that Torah is a piece of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Torah is literally HaKadosh Baruch Hu's raton himself in the world. Torah speaks not to our guf, but speaks to our neshama. Torah is what elevates our physical existence to a place of ruchnius, but meromim our existence from just being an animalistic existence and just being drawn after our desires and our taivos to an existence that's more spiritual, that's connected to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's a neshama existence. And Rav Yosef, when he learned Torah and he realized the hashpa, the unbelievable influence that Torah was having on him, on his life, he said, I have to celebrate this because I have to understand that, yeah, through the Torah, I have a whole different appreciation of life, of what life is about, what life is supposed to be teaching us. This is a very important lesson for all of us, certainly as we approach the tremendous Yom Tov. We should literally pinch ourselves and jump for joy and dance and scream and go wild and be so super excited about the opportunity that we have that we learn Torah. Most of the world doesn't learn Torah. Even most of the Jews, unfortunately, don't yet learn Torah. And the Torah has such an impact on us. I look on the screen, I see Talmidim who a few months ago maybe didn't have this romumah, didn't have this feeling of being elevated, and all of a sudden with Torah and more Maseches Gittin and more Gittin and now maybe a little Makos or whatever it took to bring them to a point, and there's a certain elevation which exists. We're going to say in Kiddush on Yom Tov, Shabbach Arbanu Mikolam, Romamanu Mikolash, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu elevated us from every other nation in the entire world. Obviously, it's the Torah which is the secret to our elevated status. It's the Torah which we're zocha to learn and to engage in and to hopefully have become a part of us, which brings us this Romamos. We should be zocha v'yitz Hashem to engage in the Torah, like Rav Yosef says, Shalamadeti Torah in the Shomampi. It's not just enough to walk into Shavuos. Okay, I'm here. No, a person has to learn Torah. And when they learn Torah and engage in Torah, Torah elevates them. We should be zocha v'yitz Hashem to have this special Romamos, a special elevation which Torah can and does provide for every single one of us.
Yishar koach, Rabbi Yehuda, thank you so much. I'd like to invite Rabbi Goldschmidt to say some words of inspiration. I'd like to invite Rabbi Goldschmidt to say some words of inspiration. Okay, we'd like to invite Rabbi Roblowski to say some words of inspiration. Rabbi Roblowski? Rabbi Goldschmidt, Rabbi Roblowski? Okay, let's move on. Is Rabbi Schneider with us? Rabbi Rich? Rabbi Goldschmidt?
You want me to go?
Please, Rabbi Rich, thank you.
Okay. The Chassam Sofer discusses in his drashas, the Chassam Sofer discusses the measure you sowed in the Yantav of Shavu individual. And he explains a lot of different aspects of the Yantav with this he sowed. First of all, he explains that this is why that we received the Torah after we got out of Mitzrayim. Depths of Tuma. And no one was worthy to receive the Torah at this point. And it's to show that even if we're on the lowest level, and even if we find ourselves in the deepest of depths, it doesn't matter, because we still have a chelek in the Torah. And this is why we can all be happy on Shavuos equally, because we all have a chelek in the Torah, no matter where we're holding in life, no matter where we're holding in our learning, we all have an equal chelek in the Torah. So he explains a couple of minhagim that we have on Shavuos with this also. He says, this is why we have a minhag to decorate shuls with trees, because he says that there's different types of trees. There's some fruit trees that bear a lot of different fruits. And then there are some trees that don't bear any fruit at all. And he said, these trees that don't bear any fruit at all can still be raised up on Shavuos by learning whatever their chelak is. He also uses this to explain why we have a minhag to have milchiks on Shavuos. So he says that when milk comes out of an udder, so it's separated, and now you can have the milk, you have two options. You can separate the milk into its three different parts. You could have the cream, which you could use to make butter, and then you have another part that you use to make cheese, and then the final part, which is really just thrown away because it's mechal, of it's worthless. Or you can make a product out of the entire milk that comes out together as one, and that's where you have the best product. So he says the same thing is true with us. Kadosh Baruch Hu removed us from the Goyim, and now we have the Jewish people as an entirety. And some people want to start making groups within the Jewish people and say, well, we have the Talmidei Chachamim, they're the top. And then we have the Beinonim people who learn a little bit, so they'll be in the middle. And then the people who don't learn at all, they'll be an entirely separate group. The Chassam Sofer says, no, that's why we eat Milchiks on Shavuos, as a reminder to us that, no, we have to take all of Klal Yisrael as one, that everyone has a chelek in Torah, and as long as they're fulfilling whatever their chelek is, that's all that matters, because everyone has a chelek in Torah. He also uses this to explain the bracha of Asher Bachar Banu, Berchus HaTorah. Asher Bachar Banu Mikol Amim, and Asan Lanu Es Taraso. He chose us from all the other nations. That's it. It doesn't say, and then within the nation, within Klal Yisrael, he chose the Talmidei Chachamim into one group, and then the Balabatim in another group, and everyone has their own group. No, that's it. Asher Bachar Banu Mikol Amim. Our nation was chosen from all the other nations, and that's it. He also uses this to explain the Gemara of Metziah that says Eretz Yisrael was destroyed because they didn't make Berchus HaTorah first. What does that mean? It was destroyed because they didn't make Berchus HaTorah first. They didn't say Asher Bachar Banu. They thought, no, the Torah is for the Talmidei Chachamim, and that's it. But we don't have to learn Torah because we're not Talmidei Chachamim. So therefore, because they weren't themselves in the of their abilities. They weren't machshav that even if they're not the best of the best, that they still have a chelek in Torah. And this is a prerequisite to receiving the Torah, is recognizing your self-worth and your value in Avodas Hashem and your value in the Torah. That's why before getting the Torah, we're told, V'atem tiyu li mamleches kohanim v'goy kadosh. You have to recognize this. Before you can get the Torah, you have to recognize that Kadosh Baruch Hu has chosen us as the holy nation. And when we realize how valuable we are, so then we're able to receive the Torah. And Rav Moshe Feinstein points out that this is why we read Bamidbar. This is why we lay in Bamidbar before Shavuos every year. Because in Bamidbar, we're told of the counting of Klal Yisrael. And the Torah uses the language of Su'u when it comes to the counting, that by counting a person, you raise them up because you show the importance of each individual. Each individual is important. It's not, oh, we have this whole Klal Yisrael. No, each individual is important. The Sfarim say there are 600,000 letters in the Torah compared to the 600,000 Jews. And if one letter is missing in the Torah, so the Torah is not kosher. And the same thing is true with Klal Yisrael. If one Jew is missing from Klal Yisrael, if one Jew isn't playing their role in the Limud HaTorah, so then the Kabbalah HaTorah isn't the same. So I quoted fascinating from Avlazer Gordon, the pasuk we never notices. We sing it all the time. Rachel mevaka abaneha, and it ends with abaneha ki einenu. And then, so we see that it starts as plural, as Rachel mevaka abaneha, and then it says abaneha ki einenu, which is a yachid. So she cries over Klal Yisrael, but the pain is really over each individual. Each individual is important to her. And this is what we have to realize as we head into Shavuos, that it doesn't matter where we're holding in our Limud HaTorah. It doesn't matter where we're holding, oh, I'm not as good as this other guy. I don't learn as much as him. He's finishing the Masechta. I didn't finish the Masechta yet, whatever it is. We all are given a Chelek in Torah, and a Kadosh Baruch Hu just wants to see us try and maximize our Chelek in Torah. So just as this should make us feel good to say, well, look, you know, I don't have to be as good as this other guy. As long as I'm doing my Chelek, it's a tremendous achrayus also to realize that we really do have an achrayus to fulfill our Chelek in Torah. Figure out what that Chelek is. When we say Asher Bachar Banu, that you chose us, and recognize that you chose me, and that you've given me, that you've given me a Chelek in Torah, to figure out what that Chelek is, to make sure that I'm able to maximize my Limud HaTorah, and that I could come to Kabbalah HaTorah and say, thank you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for giving me that Chelek.
Yishar Kvar, Rav Rush, thank you so much. Rav Blasky, I'd like to hear from you, please.
So nice to see everybody. Can you hear me?
Yes.
One of the things that HaKadosh Baruch Hu tells Klal Yisrael right before Matan Torah is something surprising. He says, Atem re'item asher asiti l'mitzrayim v'asadchem l'kind b'in hashem v'aviyatchem elai. You saw what I did for you in Mitzrayim, and I carried you on the wings of eagles, and I brought you to me. And Rashi and Parshas Bo explains more in depth what this miracle that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is reminding them of right before Matan Torah, that when Klai Yisrael were leaving from Ramses to go to Sukkos, and they're going from one place to the other place, what should have been a trip of 3 days, HaKadosh Baruch Hu did a nace, and right when they set out to walk, suddenly they just ended up in Sukkot. HaKadosh Baruch Hu saved them that 3-day trip. So a couple of questions. First of all, why specifically this nace is the one that you're reminding them of right before giving them the Torah? Question two is, what was the purpose of that nace? Anyway, they're going to be traveling in the Midbar for a very long time. What did you just save them with that 3-day jump that you suddenly did for them? So, and how does this relate to the next pasuk that comes up in right before Matan Torah? Va'atem shemoa tishmu v'kol yishmatem abriti. So the Al Sheikh answers at least one of these questions. The Al Sheikh on Parshas Bo says, what was the toelas, what was the benefit of this nace? He said that HaKadosh Baruch Hu were given the mitzvah to make matzah, and they had to make sure the dough wouldn't rise, but they weren't given enough of time to bake that matzah. They were kicked and chased right out of Mitzrayim. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, go right now. So they're leaving Ramses with dough. They're told that you can't let it rise, but they have a 3-day trip until Sukkos, until they could even bake it. This is an impossible task. How are they going to be able to do this? But they anyway set out on the task with their dough, and right when they started to go, suddenly HaKadosh Baruch Hu did a miracle and they were in Sukkos. He sent Malachim to carry them and they were suddenly in Sukkos. Why is HaKadosh Baruch Hu reminding them of this nace right now? He's about to give them Kol HaTorah Kula, 613 mitzvot with so many details and so many intricate things that you have to know just to understand them. To learn it is difficult, let alone to keep everything. And lest you have that question, but how are we going to do this? This is an impossible task. Well, just remember that miracle that I did for you a couple of days ago. I gave you the mitzvah of matzah. You didn't understand how this is going to possibly work out, but you did what you could. You started to go, and suddenly you were in Sukkos, and you were able to bake the matzah without it rising for those 18 minutes. That's a really important introduction towards the receiving of the Torah, to understand that when you do your part, and as difficult as the task might seem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu then comes in and carries you with malachim and helps you be able to do it. The next pasuk that HaKadosh Baruch Hu says right after Va'asadchem Akan Pinasharm, Va'biyatchem Elai, is Va'atim Shamoa Tishmu, with the famous Rashi. Shamoa Tishmu, why is it sounds repetitive? Shamoa Tishmu, if you learn it at first and it's really difficult and bitter and hard to understand, don't worry. Keep on learning. Kol Hascholos Kodesh, all beginnings are hard. In the end, it's going to become sweet. You just start the process, and the Kodesh Baruch Hu is going to help you as you're going down the line. And we'll end up just with a mashal of you know, maybe one thing that we could do when going into Shavuot is you take upon yourself one small extra thing that you're going to learn between this Shavuot and next Shavuot. 1 minute extra every day, 1 Mishnah extra every day. Rabbi David, the Rosh Shiva, likes to speak of the pasuk in Mishlei, the Kovet Zayad Yarveh, that a person takes a little bit every day. It looks like very little, but over 365 days, over a long period of time. So I heard that following idea that, you know, airlines, what they're always trying to do is figure out how can we make our plane weigh less? Because the most expensive thing about flying a plane is the fuel, and the heavier the plane, the more fuel that's going to be used up. So, for example, a couple of years ago, Lufthansa came up with an idea. They figured out how to make the cargo crates weigh 13 kilo less each. And that would seem to be like minuscule amount of a difference when you're talking about a jumbo plane that weighs 588 tons. What's 13 kilo per crate going to do? When you add up the number of crates per flight, you add up the number of flights that they're flying every day, they figured out that in 2 months, they saved carrying 1 million tons of weight. And that saved them a lot on the fuel. 30 years ago, the executive director of American Airlines, Robert Krendel, ordered his chefs, and he said, when you make the salads, I want you to put on in each person's salad one olive less. Give everybody one olive less. Everybody thought he's crazy. But they added up the difference that it made, and in 1 year, the company saved $40,000, which nowadays is equivalent to $80,000 just on the weight of the olives, because it adds up per person, per flight, over an entire year. So too, Lahavdil, with us. You take upon one Mishnah, that's 365 Mishnahs in a year from now. 5 minutes, that's a lot of hours by the end of the year. And Kovetz Ayad, Yarbeh. You take a little bit of time, you just start the process, you'll come out with a lot, and the Kodesh Baruch Hu also will come in and give you that extra Tziyad Nishma Yishakaya.
Yishakoach, Rabbi Roblatsky, thank you so much. We'd like to invite Rabbi Goldschmidt to say a few words. We'd like to invite Rabbi Goldschmidt to say a few words. Okay, we'll be moving. Rabbi Goldschmidt, can you hear us?
Let me try without the microphone.
You're good.
Go ahead. Maybe I was muted. 1 second. Let me
okay,
see.
Okay, you're good. You're good. We can hear you. You're alive.
Can you hear me now with the microphone?
Yes.
Great. So nice to see everybody, especially the fact that we see some old and new faces, and we see a second generation here. I saw somebody holding a baby. It's beautiful. We read Megillah Asuras on Shavuos, and one of the reasons why we read Megillah Asuras is because the Gematria of Rus is 606, and when you add that to the seven Noachad laws, the seven mitzvahs b'nei Noach, you get to 613, which is what we're doing on Shavuos. We're accepting upon ourselves 606 mitzvahs. I'd like to take a look at the way Rus is Mekabel, those 606 mitzvahs. The pasuk tells us, after Rus decides to become Jewish, Rus says, "Ki el asher telchi eleich upa asher talini olin." The way you walk, I will walk, and the way you will sleep, I will sleep. Says Rashi. What's Rus referring to when she says, "Kasher telchi eleich"? Says Rashi. "Shemitoch d'varasha Rus atulomit she'amelon ami aser lon alotes put chutz b'tchut Shabbos." Naomi told Rus, "You know that on Shabbos, you're not allowed to walk more than 2,000 amos. We're not even talking about carrying. We're talking about Tchum Shabbos, that if there's no Erev and you want to walk into the forest with no inhabitants, you can after 2,000 amos, you have to stop." So what did Rus say? Kasher telchi elech, the way you walk, I'll walk. Says Rashi further. A female cannot be alone with a male. She'ena isha, that's not his wife. She responded and said, "Basher tolini olin, the way you sleep, I will sleep." So I heard the question asked. It sounds like the statements don't fit the description. Naomi said you cannot walk past Chum Shabbos. Naomi said you can't be alone with a man and a wife. A man and a woman cannot be alone. And she responded, instead of saying what we would have thought to say, "I won't sleep that way" or "I won't walk that way," she said, "Basher tilchi elech, ba'asher talini olin. The way you walk, I will walk. The way you sleep, I will sleep." And what you see here is an unbelievable thing in Rus's response. Rus's response is completely positive. It's not a negative. It's not a restriction. Walking out of Tum Shabbos is not a restriction. It's not, "I won't walk that way." I will walk that way. The fact that you can't be misyachid, a man and a woman, is not a restriction. Ba'asher talini olin. The way you walk, the way you sleep, I will sleep. It's completely positive. Not only is Rus teaching us to be mekabel the 606 mitzvos this coming Shavuos, but she's also teaching us a perspective in mekabel mitzvos. Mitzvos are not there to restrict us. On the contrary, mitzvos are there to empower us. When a person goes ahead and is mekayim the mitzvos, and a person restrains himself from doing melachos on Shabbos, and a person restrains himself from doing acts that are usher, he's not restricting his neshama. On the contrary, he's empowering his neshama. As we know in the mission of us tells us, "Ezu ben choron in el misha oisik v'atayra." When somebody is free, what? A person who's free? If you sit down at the Gemara, you sit down, you listen to a shir for an hour or 2 hours, that's called Ben Choron, yes, says the Mishnah. Ben Choron al-Misha Osef Bar-Torah, when a person goes ahead and he observes the halakha, they're not restrictions, they're feelings of empowerment. The truth is, I've often said over the idea from Yisro. Yisro, we know, gave up all the Zara. He was a tremendous priest. And he said, "I want to be Jewish." And the question is asked, why is that so special? We know the Mishnah Avos tells us that when it comes to Torah mitzvot, we say, Ashrecha b'olam hazeh v'ashrecha b'olam hazeh. When a person goes ahead and does mitzvot, he's praiseworthy in this world, he enjoys this world, he enjoys the next world. How could it be that it's so praiseworthy to become Jewish? If you look at the Mishnah Avos says, Kachi darcha shel Torah, the way of Torah is, pas melech toichal, eating bread and water, v'alar tzisha, and drink on the soup on the floor, mayim tzuris tishta, have a little bit of water. So, I don't understand. How can a person do that? And the Mishnah says, imata oisa kein, if you do this, ashrecha b'olam hazeh v'ashrecha b'olam hazeh. What does that mean? Only when a person goes ahead and jumps into learning Torah. Only when a person goes in and is mekabel Torah. So you see the perspective of Rus and the way Yisrael approached Torah and mitzvahs, not as restrictions, rather empowerment. When a person goes ahead and has that perspective of Torah and mitzvahs, when a person goes into Shavuos, when a person perceives his avodas Hashem not as a restriction, rather as an empowerment, then we go ahead and we have Ashrecha b'olam hazeh, Ashrecha b'olam hazeh. This Shavuos, we should go ahead, we should realize and recognize the geshmak, the beauty and enjoyment that we have from being Jewish and the Torah. We should go ahead and be mekabel the Torah, be avo, be simcha this Shavuos. Good yontif.
Yishkoa, thank you so much. Rabbi Goldschmidt, would like to hear a few words from Rabbi Schneider. Rabbi Schneider?
Gotcha. Okay, the whole unmute button thing is a little tricky. Anyways, everyone's sentiment to see all your faces over here is a real schuss for us. Usually we're actually seeing you, our Talmidim in Yeshiva. It's a very bizarre thing to be speaking to you from our Batei Medrash in our own homes and not to see you in person and discuss your learning plans over Shavuos. So it's a small idea. Hopefully that will help carry us through. I want to start with the Gemara in Shabbos brings down a famous Gemara. We've all heard it many times beforehand. Bnei Yisrael uttered the famous phrase of Na'aseh V'Nishma. And that phrase, Na'aseh V'Nishma, gave us the chance, as the Gemara describes, that 600,000 angels came down, and they gave us each of us received two crowns from one angel. And yet, only a little while later, about 40 days later, we sin with the Egel Azav, and it requires two angels to take the crowns off our heads. How come one angel couldn't do the same job? One angel put two crowns on our heads. Why couldn't they have one angel take both crowns off our heads? I'll leave that as a question for the next 4.5 minutes. Hopefully I'll get to it by the time I finish. P.S.S. the Rebbe, who is the Eish Kodesh, as we call him. So one time he was lamenting to his Talmidim. He feels like he does so many things. He wishes he could, encourage, do more things to serve a Kodesh Baruch Hu. I would try to daven more, but I daven as hard as I can, he said. I would learn more, but I maximize my hours already, he said. He says, you know what I wish I could do? I wish I could convert. I wish I could convert to being a Jew. But I'm already a Jew. What am I going to do? I can't, the mikvah is not going to make me more kadosh. I mean, it will, of course, when you daven, but it's not going to turn me into a Jew. And I already received the milah. Then he realized, you know what I could do? I can makabel upon myself mitzvahs again. I can once again decide that I'm going to be mekabel myself, even better than it was beforehand, mitzvahs. And that's the way a person can convert every year on Shavuos night. It's true that we're born Jewish, but the zchus of what it means to be a convert, to be able to be mekabel, to put himself Torah mitzvahs, is the greatest level of a zchus one can have. And we're about to get to the close of our Sefiras HaOmer, which is going to be 50 days of counting Torah. We only count 49, but it's the 50th day is the day when we have Sefiras HaOmer. 50 actually represents the letter Nun is a 50. Nun from the word Nin, grandchildren. What Torah acceptance allows for us to do is allows us to have a Masorah in our lives to pass down to our families. You, your parents pass down to you, and you in turn, one day at the right time, will pass down to your families. Some of you even over here I see on the have families already on the Zoom. You have families already. And you're able to pass down what you've received every single Shavuos, every single Matan Torah over to your families with the Nun. But we're going to read next week's Parsha when we ran away from our Torah. As we know, and they're represented by backward Nuns. Backward Nuns single off, as the Gemara describes, that we ran away from Matan Torah. Like an Ish, a Borech Beit HaSefer. The opposite of what happened to us this past year in Yeshiva when we were thrown out of Yeshiva, not by the Yeshiva Baruch Hashem, but by the situation going on around us. We had to run away from Yeshiva not with excitement, but with sadness that we had to cut our time short. But next week's parsha, or for us it's next week, but you'll be in 2 weeks, is discussion of leaving Har Sinai, and the nuns are backwards. Because backwards nuns means that we did not accept the Torah properly at that time. And it happens to be that the gematria of two nuns is 100, as we know, and the gematria of Modim is also 100. And the reason why is because we're trying our hardest right now to be Modim to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to realize how fortunate we are that we're able to have a Torah. For many of us, Torah in years past was a burden and an obligation. The goal right now is that it should become an opportunity and a moment of excitement for us. And therefore, our two backwards nuns that we ran away from beforehand, we now try to realize to HaKadosh Baruch Hu how fortunate we are, Modim, that we're able to thank Hashem for giving us the opportunity to be able to receive His Torah. With that in mind, I'll tell you two quick stories, and then I'll end off with the question I started with. There's a one time, Rav Yonason Eibshitz, this is brought down by Rav Usher Weiss as well, and one of his farm. Rav Yonason Eibshitz one time was davening in shul. He davened in shul probably every day when thank God he wasn't in the time of Corona. He could daven in shul, and he was one of his talmidim was sitting next to him, and he started to listen closer to his davening. He noticed that every single day in davening, he left out one of the brichos of shachar. He listened, and he never heard him say shalom asani goy. He never heard him say those words. And after kind of consulting with a few of his friends, he mustered up the courage to speak to Yonason Eibshitz himself. And the Talmud goes to the Rebbe and says, Rebbe, I have a quick question to ask you. You know, I've noticed davening by you all these years that you missed one of the brichos of shachar. He says, I don't miss any brichos of shachar. He says, yeah. He says, I've never heard you say in shul shalom asani goy. He says, you're right. He says, I don't say it in shul. He says, Rebbe, what does it mean? You don't say it in shul? He said to him, how can I wait 20 minutes to say a bracha, shalom asani goy? I can't wait 20. How do you wait 20 minutes to make a bracha in the morning, shalom asani goy? The first thing in my mouth, I wash my hands, I say shalom asani goy. I was given the Torah. I can't possibly wait that long before thanking God's bracha for the gift he gave me of the Torah. We have to realize how fortunate we are. Modim, two nuns. Again, the letter nun, 50. Representing our future, representing the Sfirsa Omer, the receiving of the Torah. There was a story brought down, Rabbi Yaakov Galinsky brings down, he said that he was in Siberia with many other special holy people, both Jews and non-Jews alike. And all these people were there in the time, during the time of the war, and they were thrown in Siberia. And one time he was going to sleep and he noticed a recent person who was thrown into Siberia with him. In the middle of the night, got up, looked around him, reached under his bed, grabbed a little bag out, and he started to mess around. He noticed that he was putting on some uniform. And he saw this person put on the uniform, and he started to march around, and he gave a little salute, and he quickly took off his uniform after a minute and went back into bed afterwards. The next morning, Walensky goes over to him and says to him, you know, can I ask you a quick question? I noticed something last night. He goes, don't you ever tell anyone what I did? He said, I just want to understand why you did it. He says, all year round, you know, all day, they try to strip me of who I really am. For 1 minute every single day, I will not forget that I am a general of an army, that I'm someone who's very special, and I have to constantly remind myself of who I'm supposed to be. So 1 minute a day, I act like a general. So I never forget that I'm supposed to be someone who's very, very special. And that's the shot over here. That's what it means to be someone who's who's kashur, who's connected to where his roots are. The nun, the nin, the future, the generations, 50 represents us accepting everything that we have. And that's really the idea behind the two angels. When we say Naaseh V'Nishma, we are transforming ourselves to something completely different. And this transformation allows us to have one angel making us transformed with two crowns that he's able to give. When we sin later on, we're different people already. We're a whole different creation. And we have two special crowns. One malach can only do one job. It cannot strip us of both of our crowns. It requires two malachim to strip us of each of our crowns. I'll give you all a bracha, myself a bracha as well, especially in this time period we live in today. Which we zocha to realize, no matter what's going on around us, we are generals. We are we're the most fortunate people in the world to be the Mekablim of HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Torah, number 50, representing our future and our nin, and our generations to come. Always march around your house, and you should always realize that you are special. When you daven alone, you daven like you're with the melech. You tuck yourself in. You don't wear your pajamas. When you learn a Shavuos night, you learn as if there's a whole base of enemies around you, though no one's drowning except for your parents, maybe, and your siblings. But if you have that approach and that attitude, we're able to push all the other things going on around us aside and realize that our biggest chus in the world is to be the Avdei Hashem that we were gifted to become.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Schneider. We'll be listening to Rabbi Feld.
Yes, koach. Shkoach to all the Rebbeim's chizuk, and it's getting me fired up. I might just stay up tonight, learn all night tonight. Who knows? So we're coming up on Shavuos here, which is obviously for a guy in yeshiva or alumni, it's a day that we wait for. It's the day where we get the Torah. We all work so hard on learning Torah, whatever your chelik may be. And therefore, we should be excited. As our Schneider mentioned, that this year obviously is not the ideal circumstances for Shavuos, but let's make it what we could. So I was always bothered by the idea that Shavuos is called Shavuos. It's called weeks, right? It'd be like showing up to the Super Bowl, and instead of calling it the Super Bowl, call it the season, or the NBA Finals, we'll just call it the season. I mean, the event itself is this great thing, and we're just referring to everything that led up to the event. We're calling it weeks, Shavuos. Why do we call it Yom Matan Torah Seinu, the day where we actually receive the Torah? So there's many different answers to this classic question. There's one I saw in a different context I want to share with you guys. Rav Nevenzahl points out that on the way to receiving the Torah, the way to Har Sinai, there's many different events that happen. One of them was Emara. Emara, two main things happened. Number one, the Jewish people only had bitter water. And they complained to God. They said, you brought us out here to kill us. We have no water to drink. We only have bitter water. That's event number one. Event number two, what happened was that they received three mitzvahs at Mara. They received Kibbut of Aim, they received Shabbos and Dine Mamanos. And Rav Nevenzahl, he says, what's the connection between these two seemingly not connected at all events at Mara? What's the deal with the mitzvahs and the bitter water? So Rav Nevenzahl explains that the idea is it's teaching you a way of how to learn Torah. He says, if you look, how did the water become sweet? It wasn't because of honey or sugar. They put a sweetener in the water. Moshe Rabbeinu threw in a bitter piece of wood. And through that came out sweetness. And that's also why, therefore they got the Torah at Mara. They got Torah to teach you that this is the way that you get Torah any time in your life. When it's bitter, sometimes in the beginning, like Rabbi Lublaski said, in the beginning, sometimes it can be very difficult for us. And sometimes you have to throw in something bitter to make out something sweet at the end. You throw in a little bit of hard work, hard work, hard work, and then what comes out is so sweet. And that's why the Jews received the first three mitzvahs at Mara, to say this is the key to receiving the mitzvah. And now they were able to go and receive the Torah in its completeness. And this is the idea of Shavuos. We call the day that we receive the Torah Shavuos because it's not really just about the day itself. It's about all the effort we put in before Shavuos to get it. Every single week that led up to it, you put in the proper effort. Then when it comes to the real Yom Matan Torah Seinu, you're going to feel like, oh, wow, I really got this. This is amazing. This is what I worked for. And Shavuos is just an example for every single day. Every single day you enter a base measure. It's a new Shavuos. You say Birchas HaTorah. We're really accepting the Torah upon ourselves every single day. Just to conclude, I'll tell you an idea that I heard today. So my daughter's obsessed with this book, The Hungry Caterpillar. And we're discussing caterpillars, me and my three-year-old daughter. If you guys don't know, you should do some chazar. It's a great book, The Hungry Caterpillar. And what a caterpillar, the way it works, for those who don't know, it spins a cocoon. And after it comes out a butterfly. It was an amazing thing. Never actually seen it happen, only in this book. But what happens is that the way they're able to fly a butterfly is that they push and they push the cocoon. And their wings get strengthened through the fact that they have to break through their cocoon to come out. And what would happen if somebody saw this happening and sees a butterfly struggling and decides, I'm going to help out this butterfly. I'm going to open the cocoon for him. What would happen is the wings would never be strong enough to allow that butterfly to fly for the rest of its life. And the idea is, it's a true Google it. I did. Check it up. The idea is only through the struggles is the butterfly able to be successful the rest of its life? Does it have the strength to be successful? And it's the same exact thing with us with Talmud Torah. I was trying to explain this to my three-year-old daughter. She didn't care at all. So the same idea by us, that if we work hard, we work hard. We don't take shortcuts. But I always say, I'm going to be a melis. I'm going to put in all the shavuos, all the weeks before the Torah. That way, and I think that's the only way, you'll come up being able to fly, be successful the rest of your life. Everyone should have a fantastic shavuos.
Thank you so much, Rabbi Feld. Rabbi Kusser, I'd like to hear from you, please.
Thank you very much. First of all, it's chus to be here. Thanks for the opportunity to speak to the guys there of Yontif. There's a famous Gemara in Pesachim, famous if you know it, that says, not sure if I keep getting muted over here. I don't know if you all hear me. But Anyways, you said Rabbi Yosef says if it wasn't for this day of Matan Torah, there would be many Yosefs in the Shuk. So it's a very, very interesting Gemara. There would be many Yosefs in the Shuk. So what is he referring to? The proper terminology would be, if it wasn't for this day of Matan Torah, if it wasn't for receiving the Torah, Kabbalah Satorah, then I'd be an ordinary person. I'd be an ordinary Joe, so to say. An ordinary Yosef. Like, what does that mean? There would be many Yosefs in the Shuk. So, it's a Vart that I like to say over because I hold it to be as a Ben Torah, everyone should think that this concept is true in their lives. There's a famous sefer called Shalos and Tshuvos Mimamakim, written by Rav Oshri. Rav Oshri was one of the rabban, was a rav in Europe, and it was a tremendous Talmud Chacham, and he was put in charge of this museum that Hitler wanted to have for the extinct race called the Jewish people. And because he was in charge of this, so they would, anytime they would ransack a shul or whatever it is, they would take siddurim, chumashim, svarim, different types of things, whatever it is, you know, a menorah, whatever it is, and they would give it to him to organize in this museum for the extinct race of the race of the Jewish people. And therefore he had access to hundreds, if not thousands, of svarim, and he was able to answer shilas, you know, throughout the time of the Holocaust. And all the shilas, all the questions that people asked him, he put into the sefer called Shilas and Tshuvos Mimamakim, or Responsa for the Holocaust in English. And you should see the questions that people asked. People asked the most mind-boggling questions. You're talking about people who, like, you know, life and death situations every second of the day. And they were asking questions that we don't ask in a time of freedom right now. They're asking a time of persecution. And it's not normal what these people were asking, what Judaism and what halacha and what hashkafa meant to them and all these type of things. This is what they're asking in a time like this. And this is what he wanted to document for the world. And I hold that this sefer is the ultimate in Kiddush Hashem, the ultimate Kiddush Hashem. You know, when we wake up on the wrong side of the bed in the morning, so our davening is like here. When we wake up on the right side of the bed in the morning, our davening is here. When we're feeling up to it, so yeah, we'll show up to morning Seder. When we're not feeling up to it, so I'll show up, you know, at 11, at 12, whatever it is, or I'll wait till Rabbi Emoli comes to the room, or whatever it is. You know, every day we feel something different, and since we feel something different, therefore my learning, my Avodas Hashem, the Ben Torah in me reacts to the way I feel. Comes along, Rav Oshri, and says, look what people did, and look what people, how they were B'nai Torah, how they were Oved Hashem. Every day they woke up on the wrong side of the bed, and still they kept the Torah the way they were supposed to keep the Torah, and still they were doing it, and they just kept going and kept going. Go back to the Gemara right now. What does it mean when Rabbi Yosef says that if it wasn't for the day of Matan Torah, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu wouldn't have given us the Torah, there would be many Yosefs in the Shuk. You know what it means? It means that if it wasn't for the Torah anchoring our lives, then you know what? Sunday, I would be that kind of Yosef. Monday, I would be that kind of Yosef. Tuesday, I would be that kind of Jew. Wednesday, I'd be that kind of Jew. But when a person keeps Torah, when a person feels that it's central in his life, and it's something that no matter how he feels, I don't care if I have a headache, I don't care if I wake up on this side of the bed, I don't care if the coffee was cold, I don't care if my chavrusa is sick, I am showing up. You know why? Because that's what a Kaddish Baruch Hu wants from me. So it wasn't for the day of Matan Torah, there would be many of me, many different types of personalities coming out over here. But because of Torah, I'm anchored. I'm the same person day in and day out. And we should all remember that. We should all be Makabel, the Torah, the Ava. Good to see all of you. Have a wonderful, wonderful Yontif.
Thank you so much, Rabbi Kunstler. We're lining up to hear from Rabbi Olshin, who will be closing the program. Thank you. Rabbi Olshin?
Yes, thank you so much. Great to see everybody here. I want to thank all the Rebbeim for sharing wonderful words of Torah and for all you guys for joining. It's an amazing gathering together as we approach Har Sinai together and Chag HaShavuot. As many of you know, on Chag HaShavuot, it's the Yahrzeit of David HaMelech, and it's the Yahrzeit of the Baal Shem Tov. So I was afraid that every day was going to talk about the Baal Shem Tov, so maybe I'll talk about David HaMelech. But since he didn't, I'll speak about the Baal Shem Tov. But I think it was Rav Huttner who pointed out the irony that the yard site of the Baal Shem Tov is on Zman Matan Torah Seinu, and the yard site of the Vilna Gaon, who represents Lithuanian Torah Jewry, right, the example of Talmud Torah, of Lamdus, his yard site is on Sukkos, Zman Simchaseinu. Seems it should have been the other way around. But the truth is that the Avas HaTorah of the Baal Shem Tov is no less than the Vilna Gaon. What was the Chiddush of the Baal Shem Tov? So when we talk about Avas HaTorah, we talk about the Gedolei Yisrael, we talk about Great Hatzmada, we talk about using all your intellect, all your sharpness in breath and in depth. And for the Baal Shem Tov, it was all that, but it was more. The Iker thing for the Baal Shem Tov was the Nishmas HaTorah, the connection to Ribbono Shel Olam, the Dveikus Shel HaTorah, the light that is behind every single letter in the Torah. As the Gemara points out, the Gemara in Shabbos, on Kuf Hei, Amid Aleph, the Gemara says, Anochi no trikon, Ana nafshi ksavis yavis. Kadosh Baruch Hu, when he said Anochi, he was giving us the message that I have, ki'ilu kivayochal, placed my soul, given to you through the writing of the Torah. The Torah is the revelation of a Kadosh Baruch Hu's soul. That is what the Torah is. Imagine you're sitting in the Beis Medrash in Torah Shraga. It wasn't so long ago that you did. And somebody comes in and says, there's a letter for you. And he hands you a letter. Imagine a handwritten letter. It's not a text. It's a handwritten letter. And on the back of the envelope is a SWAK, which I imagine none of you know what that means. Only the married people know what that means. Sealed with a kiss. And you realize this is from the girl you love. So you're not going to open up. You're not going to open it right there in front of everyone else, right? You're going to put it in your pocket. You're going to wait maybe till you get back to your dorm room or to find a place where it's just you and that letter. And you're going to open that letter and you're going to carefully open it. You're not going to rip it open. Carefully open it. You're going to treat it with such care. And you're going to read a letter. And first you're going to read a letter once. And you're just going to read it for the simple things. You realize this is the letter from the girl I love. From my wife in Mitzvah Hashem, for all of us, for all of you. Or maybe before then, the girl you're engaged to, the girl you want to be engaged to. And you're reading it, and then you reread it. And you read it again. And you're looking for all the nuances. What does she mean by saying like this? And she starts talking about this. And look at the way she writes. Look at the way she writes the word love with a heart for the O, and you're looking at all the nuances of the letters. Because, my friends, this is the most important letter to you. The Torah is the love letter of HaKadosh Baruch Hu to the Jewish people. We learn it like we learn up a love letter. We cherish it. We then take the letter and we fold it up and we place it back and we save it. We never discard those letters. And if someone else read that letter, they would just read it through and they wouldn't think anything much of it, maybe. But for you, from knowing that it really, you feel the presence of your beloved, it's much more than what's written there. It's what who it came from. You feel the presence. And so when we study the Torah, we feel the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It is a love letter. And that's why perhaps the word chibur, which means a written work, is also the language of intimacy between husband and wife, is the chibur, chibur and chibur. It's why kol yom yu b'necha kechadashim, we can learn Torah every day as if it's new, like we read that love letter, we cherish it every single day. The Baal Shem Tov taught us that's what the Torah is about. That's the love of Torah. Shavuos is about connecting to HaKadosh Baruch Hu through love, reading his love letter again and again. It's a shame we should all be together soon in Yerushalayim, sharing stories of Shavuos past, of connections of love, love between us and HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and love between us and each other.
Thank you so much for joining. Thank you for Rabbi Amalei for emceeing and all the Rebbeim. Chag Sameach to everybody.
Chag Sameach to everybody. Looking forward to keeping in touch.
Chag Sameach.
Hello?